Okay, that recording. Chairperson Pollock, do you want me to go ahead and do the roll call?
Well,
Or do you want to?
take the date here, Wednesday, February 5th, 2025, IAPC meeting, commission meeting. And we're going to do a roll call. Okay.
Okay. Mayor's office vacant, Ward 1 vacant, Ward 2, Commissioner Bruce Burke.
Present.
Ward 3 vacant, Ward 4 vacant, Ward 5, Vice Chair Robert Clark.
Present.
Ward 6, Chairperson Lois Pollock.
Present.
All right, we have quorum.
Okay. First, item number 2, approval of the November 6, 2024 IAPC meeting. I moved to cancel a few of them, and I think we all agreed on that because we were kind of waiting for the Tucson Water to be available. Plus, it was the holidays. So anyhow, we're going back to November, and we're going to just put those. Hopefully people had received those, but if you haven't, if you could just look over the agenda, I'm sorry, the draft minutes. And
I'll just pass by all of these right here, the quorum, staff member, here's the item.
Is that all there was down to number 4?
Yeah, so it's 1, 2, 3, and then 4,
okay.
And then 5, which we went over the IAPC duties and functions from last time. And then number 6 is review of IAPC vacancies, and then quality audience and future agenda items, and what we removed.
I'll move to accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
Okay. Commissioner Burke, second.
Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No opposes. So, those are accepted. They were very detailed. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Right now, we're waiting for business services staff to,
Erin is present.
Erin has joined us, so if you could please, Erin, give us an update of business services information.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. I'll give you a quick overview, update of happenings since we last met. So business services, as we've talked about before, is currently trying to do our recruitments to fill key positions throughout the division. Some key recruitments that have finished up recently are for our finance administrator. We have offers out to candidates and for our finance managers. Those are the staff that assist our customer departments in financial and budget operations and preparation of budget and financial statements. Speaking of which, our financial statements for fiscal year 2024 are published on the website. I think that's an update since the last time we met. Follow up with providing that link to the commission so you can see the financial statements for the city of Tucson. The financial step that's after that is the single audit, which is sometimes called the CIFA or the A133 report. That is on track to be finalized. It's currently in the audit process. That's where the external auditors review all of the federal grants for the city of Tucson and provide their opinion on those grants. Once that's completed, that's also published in the same place that the annual financial statements are published. Speaking of which, federal grants are a hot topic. So that is something that we have been working on the last couple weeks with uncertainty at the federal level. So business services staff are assisting city management to make sure that we have monitoring and a handle on the federal awards that we receive and the access to those funds. In the realm of the budget, the business services staff and the city as a whole are currently in the development process for the fiscal year 2026 budget. That's where the stage that they're at right now is where department leadership proposes needs to city management level. So those discussions are the focus of the last couple weeks and the next couple weeks. All right, those are the updates I have. I'm happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability that the commission might have.
I have one right off the bat. Where does the city stand with hiring the two internal auditors?
Those positions are under the city management, city manager's office. Informally, I've heard that they are working on the recruitment. I don't have any additional details as to where that recruitment stands. But by the time you meet again, I can get an official update from city manager's office.
Because you don't have it either, right, Sarah?
I do not have that information right now, but we could get that information.
Okay. And then I have one other question. I saw the financial report for 2024. Where do we find budgets? And it's not in that report. Where does the public find budgets for each of the departments?
Okay, thank you for that question. Two places. So I can send the link to our published budget document. The financial report that we have published, you'll find the comparison to budget. So it's not really by department level, but more by fund level when you look in the financial statements.
And I'm interested in the department level.
Yeah, so those will be our budget documents. Those are published annually also and are available on the website, but we'll provide the specific link for it to make it easier to find and access.
Okay, thank you. All right. And commissioners, questions?
I'm good.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
No questions.
Thank you. Okay. Now we're moving on to item number four, Tucson Water presentation. And, you know, Commissioner Burke, you had brought this topic up, so I'm going to defer to you a little bit during the discussion or after they give a presentation as to, you know, I have a feeling I know what you're interested in, but so feel free to jump in and get your questions answered. And you too,
Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, so welcome, Mr. Schlottweiler.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you for having us. I do have a presentation prepared based on some previous conversations with Sarah and other discussions that Jim and I have had with various members of the community on this very topic in the past. So I'm just going to go ahead and share. Hopefully everything works and you guys can see everything. I didn't know you guys were going to be in person. Otherwise, I'd be happy to walk over there and sit with you guys. I'm just right across the street here. So, all right. I'm not sure how familiar everybody is with Tucson and the service area we cover. So I just kind of threw the slide in there. This is a general overview of the Tucson water system and our service area. So as you guys are aware, we serve almost 750,000 people. We cover a service area of almost 400 square miles now and continues to grow as the city grows bit by bit. We are a groundwater system. We have over 200 wells spread out throughout our system. Most of those are located in the central part of Tucson, but we do recover a lot of almost all of our water from Afro Valley now, where we do store our Colorado River water supplies and bring that into town and distribute that to our customers. So that amounts to about 30 billion gallons a year right now. So it's quite an effort, and there's a lot of infrastructure involved. It's a very complicated system, but we're also very very resilient in how we operate and everything that we can provide to our customers. There's a number of booster stations, number of PRV stations. We have over 300 million gallons in storage that we have available for supply throughout the year. And then we have over 4,700 miles of pipe, and that continues to grow almost daily within our system. That's really what we're going to focus on today, is really talking about the distribution infrastructure, specifically the smaller lines that are most affected by a lot of the Prop 411 work and the work that DTM is doing. So just a quick overview of looking at our system when we look at the age of our infrastructure, right? We're about to celebrate our 125th year as a department. And the city was really built from the center out, kind of starting in the downtown area where first water services were provided, and we continued to build out. This isn't a picture of the entire system. It's really kind of focusing on the downtown area. If I get too far out, it just looks like a big melted box of crayons. So I kind of zoomed in a little bit. But what I wanted to highlight on here was this graph or this figure shows the age of our distribution system and the age of our pipelines. The lighter the color, the older the mains. So you can see the light green and the yellows, those are upwards of 60, 70, 80 plus years old. So they've been around a while. Service life for distribution lines and a lot of the pipelines we have is right around 75 years. So as we continue to approach the useful life of these, it's something we consider replacing, but that's not always the case. And that's kind of what I'm going to walk through with you guys today is some of the criteria we use to determine whether or not replacement is needed, whether it can be deferred a while, or how that all works. This is something we've been doing for years, replacing infrastructure. It's kind of like painting a Golden Gate Bridge, right? Just like pavement maintenance, it's continuous. We just have a longer service life for some of our infrastructure. Over time, things do wear out, things corrode, nature happens, standards change, and there are things that do need to be upgraded. Just as a quick example of some of the reasons why we have to move things around, what you see here are two examples of water lines that were installed in alleys. And these are a lot of the neighborhood replacement projects that we see happening. Many of the pipelines installed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s were all done in alleys. Over time, those alleys were encroached upon by other utilities, homeowners, you name it. So when we have leaks or have to go in and do repairs in these areas, it's very difficult. One, some places you can't even get equipment in. So we have to go in there and hand dig a lot of this. People ask all the time, like, why don't you just go in there and replace those in kind where they are? Standards today are much different than they were back then. Legally, we can't even put infrastructure as close to some of these other utilities now that we could back then. A lot of the mains were put in a much more shallow depth. They've seen heavy traffic over time from garbage trucks, heavy delivery trucks, things like that. So it's made it much more difficult to maintain. So when we look at replacing these, a lot of times the most economical thing to do at this time and also into the future for maintenance purposes is to move those out into the streets. It's much more cost effective that way, short term and long term. And then, as I mentioned before, the design standards now are much different and much more conservative for new installation. If we look at the remaining useful life of a lot of our system, this is an aggregate graph. This is everything we have in our system that's 12 inch and under, all the different material types. Every material type has a different useful life. PVC is different than cement asbestos, and that's different than ductile iron pipe and so on. So what you can see here is that a lot of our pipe will reach projected end of its useful life somewhere in 2060 or so. What that means is a lot of these match up just to when they were installed in the 60s and 70s. Which is anticipated. So there's a wave coming. So we keep working at this over and over. So this is a constant part of our capital improvement program is to replace this infrastructure. We've been doing it, like I said, for decades. I started in 2004 with Tucson Water, and some of my first projects were main replacement projects. So we continue to work throughout the city. If we look at where we have failures throughout our system and what are concerns, what keeps our maintenance crews busy, what keeps us hopping, this really shows kind of the age of the pipelines and where the most failures occur. And as you can see, the highest quantities are those that are pushing around 70 years old right now. That's where we see the bulk of it. So this continues to happen. We have some sort of leak, some sort of failure almost every day. There are multiple reasons for that, some of which are not our fault. There's a lot of third party involvement. We take a snapshot of
Scott. 1 second. Can you go back to that graph?
Of course.
What are we looking at?
So this is the number of failures per 100 miles of pipe by the install year. So what it's saying is
install year. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Basically it shows that the older the pipe, the greater the failures. We have all kinds of different analytical tools that we can look at to show different type of metrics on this, but this just shows that over time, and you can see the newer the pipe, the fewer the failures we have. Yeah. And that's as a result of a number of different things, right? The installation methods, the materials, you name it, the conditions that it's installed in. So this is just for background information for you guys.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question.
Sure.
When you are installing new equipment, you indicated the life is about 75 years on the equipment that's in the ground. Does new equipment extend that life any? The new materials?
Absolutely. Once you put new equipment in, it basically starts over, right? Just like any other equipment you have, the brakes on your car wear out over time, right? You put new ones on, you've extended that a period of, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, depending on how much it's used, how it's used. Every pipeline, every valve, every pump has a different set of operating conditions, and those determine its lifespan. So there's no one size fits all for everything. These are all approximate, and every condition is different. If you have poor soil conditions, for example, or in some cases, as we'll touch on later, if the structure above it, including the pavement and the compaction above it, that will have an impact on the failure rate of some of our pipelines too.
Thank you.
Scott, I had a question, if I may, Madam Chair.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
And I may be digging too deeply into the weeds here, but for example, 1958 or 57, like off the charts. And then there are a couple of them that are way off, and then there are some of them that are just relatively small and modest in terms of failures. Is there an explanation for some of these really off the chart lines?
I don't have an explanation for you on all of these for sure, right? I wasn't working here in 1958.
No, I understand.
And, don't have the background on it, but this is just some of the information that we have. And again, this is just an example, just to show what we're looking at. And
I'm with you.
As the age of the pipe increases, so do the chances of failure and
okay.
risk to the public, the pavement structure, all the things, right? I don't have an answer why that year was a bad year.
I get it. And so I think maybe I just pull back and say, this is just illustrative and shows exactly. where the risks are.
Exactly.
Got it.
So just the snapshot of where we have main failures and leaks. This is all information that we brought in from some of our asset management system. This goes into another program that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But these are caused by any number of things, right? Over time, it can be caused by age. It can be caused by roots in places. We've seen that. I worked on a project out on 29th Street years ago. And over time, some of the older materials, some of the old cement asbestos pipe, for example, the way they're put together and the way those fittings were created, the O-rings dry out. All it takes is one little drop of water, and we have, trees that will shoot across the road, and they find that. And over time, they get in there, and they'll split the pipe and cause bigger issues. So roots, third-party damage, it could be poor compaction, anything that you can think of here. So just a snapshot of what we look at and what we see. So when we look at what it takes to replace a pipeline, whether or not it's worth replacing, whether we should do it. Obviously, if it's actively leaking or failing, that's something we'll look at and kind of determine, is this something that we have to do as an emergency right now? We might look at a short main replacement. Can we get the entire street done quickly? Those are things we address right away for a number of reasons. Obviously, public safety, the inconvenience, lack of water quality, you name it. If there's insufficient cover, a lot of the older lines were put in under different standards. So those that were in the alleys, some of which are still in the streets today, some of them only have 30 inches of cover or less. So if there's new construction coming, we're going to change the grade of the pavement for drainage or anything. It drastically reduces the cover we have, which also reduces the structural strength. It puts the pipelines at risk. And in some cases, our valves do stick up. Sometimes 1 or 2 feet above the pipeline. So there are concerns there that will affect the integrity of the pipe and actually cause more leaks and pipe failures. Also the construction cover. So oftentimes if there's a new roadway going in and we're going to put in an entire new section of pavement with subgrade, say it's an 8-inch sub base, and then we put in 4 or 6 inches of pavement, a lot of times that'll scarify down quite a bit and remove a lot of that cover. So during the time that construction is being performed, we have a reduced cover over our pipelines. And again, In some cases, when we have older infrastructure, sometimes it's best left untouched almost. But the second you make a little movement, a small adjustment to it, especially with heavy vibrating machinery over it, it'll cause premature failures in some cases. So these are things we look at. And then, of course, just based on the remaining useful life of some of our infrastructure, if we have the opportunity in places where we know it's failed in the past, and even though it may be working today, if it's something that we anticipate is going to have an issue in the future, we'll go ahead and replace that there. So we look at a lot of data. So when we kind of march forward and make the determination whether it's for any of the Prop 411 work, any Prop 101 work, or any other just capital improvements that transportation may have or that we may have, there's a lot of information that goes into your, a lot of data. So some of the basic data that we've already touched on, pipe installation year, basically the age of the pipe, the material, the size. The greater the size of the pipe, the greater the risk, right? If there's ever a failure, a 4-inch line breaks is one thing, but if a 16-inch line goes, it's a whole different story. A lot more water flowing through there, it makes a bigger mess. And then, of course, prior breaks, prior leaks. This is all information we have from either previous work orders or our asset management system that we upload into a program here. And we also look at some other information that we have. What's the surface material, for example? There are a lot of roads out there. We just finished a couple of neighborhood replacements that never really had an actual pavement section installed. It was just chip seal on top of chip seal and just multiple layers over time. There was never really a subgrade put in place. So we saw a lot of premature failures and leaks in those areas. Soil types, if we know there's bad soil or corrosive soil in a certain area, we certainly try to avoid using certain types of metallic pipe, different types of service lines. And then, of course, any stormwater flows. So washes, drainage areas, things like that. The wet dry cycling of that will have an effect over time on the pipe, and eventually, you know, things will settle just a little bit. And if it settles a little bit over time, that can be enough just to tweak it and eventually cause a failure. So all of this information is compiled into different data sets. And for about the past 8 years, we've been using a program called VODA. It's actually an artificial intelligence tool. It's machine learning. It's not like ChatGPT, but it's slightly different. And this is a tool we've been using to help predict and help rank and prioritize how we replace our infrastructure. We put all this information in there, and it shoots back out what the worst case scenarios are going to be for us. When we brought this online, I think in 2018, there were a couple different companies that were starting this out. And we gave them 5 years worth of data. Actually, we gave them 4 years worth of data and said, all right, tell us what's going to happen within that fifth year. Where are lines going to break? Where are we going to see failures? And what's going to happen? So we held that fifth year, you know, worth of data in our back pocket. They both came back. VODA came out. I think it was a 90%+ accuracy rate on where those failures were going to happen. So this is kind of a snapshot or screenshot of what some of that information looks like and what we really target when we develop our capital improvement plan, and also look at comparisons with Prop 411 work and where projects are coming in, is we target the top 1%. And this is just a snapshot of the top 1%. I think this was actually, might've been from last year, but not much has changed. So you can see in a lot of areas, there are clusters of where there's a lot of red, right? And if we go back to some of the break data and the failures, the little blue dots you'll see on here, there are clusters of those failures under there. So the main failures are one of the things that certainly drive that, but also in combination with the age and some of the other factors that were in there. So this is one of the things that we do use to help verify. So it's not just a decision that I'm making or one of our engineers are making thinking we should do this. This is something we go back to and say, hey, where does this fall in the grand scheme of things? I want to make sure we're doing kind of the worst case infrastructure first and make sure that's taken care of, because this takes a lot of time for us to go out and address all these leaks. Our maintenance staff spends quite a bit of time out there. So it's a huge effort.
Have you been able to Have you been able to determine if this tool is good? I mean, it's one thing to say, yep, that's got a 90% accuracy rate, but I don't think you could prove that because you didn't know what was, well, I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering. Not that I'm questioning the 90%, but it's just, how do you know this tool has helped you?
We can, when we see these areas such as these clusters, and I'm just calling them clusters in here, these large groupings of large neighborhoods, all light up. Again, if we go back to a lot of the failure data, you see these clusters in here, right? Where all these are, these line up with what we have here. And this continues year over year. Now, as we start to replace those, we see those go away. And it is just another tool to help us. Is it ever going to be 100% accurate? Is it going to bat 1,000 every single day? No, probably not, because there are other issues that come up that are outside of our control, such as those third-party damage incidents where we have zero control and no knowledge of anything coming up. But this is another tool to help us plan, because some of this information we don't know without quite a bit of effort of going out and gathering all this data and trying to put it into a different program, a different database. This does all that for us. And we can look at different analytics on this too, which is very helpful.
Just out of curiosity, how much does it cost to, because you're probably just paying a monthly fee or a yearly fee or something.
Yep.
How expensive is it?
I think we're around $80,000 a year.
Okay.
So it is something that, again, has helped us prioritize the next several years of main replacements and kind of put that on the map and help lay it out in order of priority. And that's always a concern, right? We like to have this as a backup. What might be my priority might be different than Jim's priority, for example, right? And he wants to have it done. But one of the things we look at is where are we losing water? You know, where are we spending a lot of time and where are we inconveniencing customers? Because when we go out and repair leaks and repair mains like this, there are a lot of people out of water oftentimes. And that's what we're trying to avoid and address those areas first.
Thank you.
So when we look at projects and the execution of this, and one of the things I know has come up in the past, and Jim and I have talked about this quite a bit and with others, is with a lot of the payment projects, I'm not trying to downplay those in any way, shape, or form, but they can go out and start doing work if they're going to replace, 2 inches of pavement or do a mill and fill. They can do that much faster than we can. And there are a lot of other things and regulatory requirements that we do have to go through as a water provider. So just starting with the design process, for example, we don't know what's underground. And so there's a lot of precursory information that we do up front, a lot of potholing information. We have to go get regulatory clearances and cultural resource clearances and environmental clearances. Anytime we're doing anything downtown, all that stuff has to be cleared first. That takes weeks, sometimes months, to get through. All of our designs do have to go to ADEQ or in a lot of cases PDEQ, who has primacy, for review prior to construction. They have a 45-day review time. There's a lot of other factors. If we're going out and replacing service lines, we want to make sure that we're out there working with the customers and working directly with them. There's scheduling that has to occur. The permitting has been much better now that the city and everybody has moved to InterGov. We have a lot of procedures and policies in place that are really making that punch right through. Also, the procurement portion of it. Most of these projects for us are done using job order contracts. We have 5 on-call contractors that we use, but we are limited in scope to doing some of those. The current cap on those contracts is $2.5 million. I know the city is looking at increasing that at some point, which will be very helpful. If we go to a public bidding process, for example, that adds time. That adds 2 or 3 months to the process. We can get a larger scope of work done, and we're doing that on some projects, but there is that additional time that it takes to get moving on things. We are trying an alternative delivery method on an upcoming project where it's a design-build project where we basically package it and hand it to a contractor and say, here's your scope of work, have it done by this date, and march forward. So the procurement is a big portion of it too, but we're working through that. And we've been working pretty well with our team and getting it done as quickly as possible. Some of the other areas that we do have, and one of the shorter and more convenient programs that we have, is something we call internally our short main program, where if we do have smaller sections of lines that have constant issues or concerns that we need to replace, those are things that we can turn around inside of 6 to 8 months and have them designed, constructed, and put in the ground. And again, there are some regulatory requirements there based on the sizing that certainly help us out. If there's ever any change in capacity, or we relocate hydrants or add services, it adds another layer of review. And again, this is something that is required by state code. So these are things that we all have to comply with. And that's part of the reason it does take us a little bit longer to implement and execute a full project than it does just to go out and replace pavement. So from a capital funding standpoint, we do devote quite a bit of funding to distribution line replacement and distribution system work. We have several programs within our budget, and I'm not going through the entire thing. This is estimated spending for the next few years based on some of the work we see. This includes our short main replacement program, our neighborhood replacement programs, where we're doing 2 to 4 neighborhoods a year. And that is in conjunction with a lot of the work that that Jim is doing over at DTM. So you can see this out of our programs, this is one of our highest funded programs. So the funding is not an issue to get these projects completed. A lot of times it is just the time that it takes to get the design complete, approved, and installed. So that is something we continue to work through and are getting faster and faster at. But we're doing a lot of work in this area. This also includes even some of our valve and hydrant replacements, right? Every time we go out and we get a request for a new pavement project, we go out and do a valve sweep. The reason being, we don't want to go out and install new pavement over that, only to find out that valve doesn't work and we have to replace it and go tear up the pavement. So every request we get for a new project, we go out and do that. We've had, I think since Prop 411 started, 70 to 80 of those inspections. Number of valves we have to have go out and turned are anywhere from 50 to 200 valves per inspection. So doing the math on that, that's several thousand valves that we've gone out and turned and inspected. Given the timing, we go out and replace those valves if we find that they're broken or inoperable prior to the paving. So everything is tidied up on our end. Even if the pipeline doesn't need to be replaced, we go out and replace those valves. And then everything is operable and hopefully doesn't need to be touched for years and years after payment is put down.
I have a question on going back to the projects. Who designs the project?
Great question. It's a combination of in-house staff. We do have technical staff, some engineers on board that will that can do that in-house. They'll do all the drafting, all the designing, everything in-house. But we do also send a lot of that out. And we have been sending more and more of that work out in order to expedite it and get it done faster. It does cost a little bit more, but we also get a shorter turnaround time because they have more resources than we do to get some of that work done. We've also brought on additional resources internally just to work directly with our staff to help push a lot of these projects through, a lot of these reviews. Every single evaluation that we have for a DTM project, when they come through, one of our staff sits down to review it. We've had two consultants coming in. They're actually sitting side by side with our staff. To help push some of these reviews through and get them expedited. So it's a combination of staff. Who does the reviews?
Yeah.
Our staff, our engineering staff, our technical staff, we have a great group, a bunch of folks down on the second floor in our engineering team who does all that work.
I'd like to return to the screen on the capital budget. And here's where I would like to get some greater understanding. And I'll speak candidly that I'm not an accountant or a CPA, but I'm reflecting on what you're saying to us today based on my experience with Prop 411 and those earlier propositions, where for a very long time now, more than a decade, I think, I've been sitting on a commission that has looked at our roads. And one of the early things that we learned was You know, if we needed to fix all of the roads in Tucson, Arizona, bring them up to a good standard, it would cost, I don't remember the number, Jim. Jim DeGroote, you're familiar with this issue. I'm just going to say a number, $800 million. So we can work from that to understand what the magnitude of the issues are. Am I correct in understanding that you don't have a number like that for the replacement of the pipes?
We don't have a number to replace all of the lines. No, that is not something I have handy or calculated, but it would be not too far from what you described for the road work. I would estimate quite a bit, probably close to $1 billion worth of infrastructure.
Yeah. And so when you compare that to the numbers you're seeing here for capital funding, to be frank, and I'm trying to be helpful. Don't misunderstand my questions, please, Scott.
Sure.
I'm trying to get a handle on whether your department, as what I understand to be an enterprise entity, really has adequate capital funding to accomplish what we need, much less how it impacts with and interfaces with roads, which can get ahead of you.
Sure. No, great question. And yeah, if we could snap our fingers and have all new infrastructure right today, that'd be fantastic. But what we're also trying to do, and again, through the prioritization methodology that we talked about here, is making sure we get as much life out of the existing assets that we can, right? I don't want to sell a car that has 20,000 miles on it only because I want something new. I'm going to make sure I get as much life out of that as we can. That is something we do, even though we are enterprise funded. You know, we're still trying to be as fiscally responsible as we can to make sure we get as much life out of every single asset that we can. That is part of what we're doing here. So, looking at it from a macro standpoint, what does it take to build a brand new water system today? That's something that's A, it's not feasible, and B, I don't think it's necessary right now. I mean, we do need to address a lot of these things, but they'll be addressed over time. And there are a lot of projects in here too that we've deferred. A lot of the proposed paving projects we've turned away and said, no, we're good. Go ahead, pave away. So it's not every single one. I know there are some, but let me finish. I think there are some other topics I want to hit too, and
sure,
talk about how we work together and what this program has ultimately been doing. So really, this is, while I understand there were some concerns coming up front where Tucson Water may have appeared to have been slowing down some of their progress on this, between Jim's team and our team and everybody really working together, we've really turned things around quite a bit. And, just to borrow a term from Jim, he calls it scaffolding the silos of excellence, right? We have two great departments to do fantastic work. And this has actually really brought us closer. And we do a much better job of coordinating right now. For example, a lot of the data sets that we had were independent of each other before. We now have a shared data set. We have a shared GIS platform that we share all of our information on, it, so we know what's happening for the next several years. So we can now plan for that. That wasn't the case before. What you see on the graph here are some upcoming projects over the next several years that we are coordinating on, where we're going to do main replacements. Some of that work we've already started on, so we can get ahead of it, so there aren't any drastic delays. So we're going to be catching up over the next several years in some of our work. Also, the benefit of combining some of these projects where we go in and do the pipeline replacement, we go in and do the main replacement, DTM follows right behind us and does the pavement work. We're limiting neighborhood disturbance, right? There's not two separate projects that are happening over time. There's not a water line project where we go in, replace the pipe, replace the pavement, they come back in, then replace the pavement later. That's disturbing them twice. It's also spending twice their money, right, for the pavement work. So ultimately, these guys are getting a complete neighborhood rehabilitation. New water lines, new pavement, anything else that goes along with that, it's a complete update. Over time, you're going to see reduced pavement cuts. We know any time that we go back into new pavement and you make a pavement patch or any type of trench repair in there, it's never going to be the same as it was when it was brand new. So we're trying to limit that too. So getting all the work done, subgrade, having them come in and follow with the pavement. We have a couple of great examples that have happened over the last couple of years, and these are ones that are to come in future years. And again, it's because of this coordination that we're going to see much greater benefits moving forward. Any remaining replacements?
Can you tell us what we're looking at? Because we've got blue boxes. There's no legend. I don't know what we're looking at.
No, you got it. So a lot of the...
I understand the streets. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a lot of the street work behind it and proposed roadway work. What you see in the blue boxes are future main replacements that we've identified as ones down the road that we are... To what I did with the down the road thing, in the future that we're going to have to replace. And we're planning ahead right now and going out doing some of those valve inspections, doing some of that precursory work. So we know whether or not we're going to have to replace those lines, or we can say, go ahead and pay without us.
Okay, because so what are the red street lines and what are the tan ones?
Those are just kind of some background streets on some priority levels there that that DTM has indicated with some of our shared data sets, and we've overlaid some of our priority areas too, and this is kind of what it comes up with. So this is just a pretty high level schematic of it, but the purpose and the illustrative purpose of this was to really just show where we are coordinating efforts on this, and we have the next couple of years planned out both on the DTM side and on the water side. So we know what's going to happen, and we're moving forward with both design and the due diligence efforts up front. So there are no delays coming up.
Thanks.
So the other thing that we're doing too, anytime we have a main replacement or a project where we're going out and removing service lines, replacing service lines on customers' property, we also have public meetings for those. It's very nice for them to come out and meet the folks that are going to be actually knocking on their doors, working on their property, replacing service lines. We're also inviting DTM out to those. So DTM staff has been showing they've been able to come out and talk about the work that's happening there too. So this is, again, a combined effort. And ultimately, it looks like a city project more so than a DTM project and a water project. It's really a combined effort, and we're really... we've been really happy with the results on this so far. And the other thing too that I wanted to highlight and I touched on a minute ago is the ultimate cost savings on this. I don't have a number to hand to you, but when you think about what we'd have to go out and do if we did a project on our own, like we have done in the past 10, 20 years, pavement replacement alone is somewhere between 10 and 30% of our overall cost of a water main replacement project. So by having them and combining this effort with DTM and what they're doing and the funding that's available through Prop 411 and making this one project, that's that allows us to spend more of our money on pipeline replacement and less on pavement. So ultimately, we're getting more bang for our buck on all of these projects. So long story short, there's been significant progress over the last couple of years on this, and we've had a number of successful projects. La Madera is under construction right now. We finished, it's not on here, not highlighted here. Rodeo Edition was one we finished. We've done a couple of phases in Las Vistas already. We have a few more that are going to be built out over the next couple of years. So yeah. So any other questions I can answer?
Go
ahead.
Do you have a map of the projects you did do in the last, say, 10 years or something?
I don't have one handy, no.
Oh, okay.
It's something we could probably come up with, but I don't have one readily available to show you right now.
Commissioner Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim. You've been patiently standing by, and I probably made the mistake, since I'm the only one that knows who you are, for failing to introduce you. Jim, you should explain, first of all, we're using acronyms here, and I assume everybody understands them, but maybe not. So DTM, and explain your position.
Sure. Please, Jim. Thank you, Commissioner Burke. My name is Jim DeGroote. I'm the Deputy Director at the Department of Transportation and Mobility. That's DTM. And I was involved in getting Prop 411 up and running with Tucson Water. And I would say that we are developing a very effective partnership in bringing this forward. You know, at first it was a little rocky. and with two different organizations with two different priority sets, we found a way to work together. And that's, I think, what Mr. Schladweller has been explaining to you. You know, for instance, when you look at the blue boxes and the red hatching, is, you know, those are the projects that we're doing in phase one of Prop 411. You can see how extensive they are. For instance, one of the things that we've done recently, and this was a, kind of our first joint project together, together and separately, it's coordinated. It's a DTM was doing the waterline work, and we were staying in close contact with them to make sure that that we could coordinate our efforts and provide a seamless a presentation of the work to the public as we possibly could. So in La Madera, you know, they would do, and before I move forward, the economics associated with our projects are very different. You know, as Scott showed you a picture showing how many different stages or different elements of work were associated with doing a waterline project. Road projects are comparatively simple. They cover a lot of area. What I need is to do a large territory to get good pricing. So what we've been doing is identifying areas where Tucson Water has a project. I will time my work in that neighborhood along with an expanded area around it to ensure that we're getting good prices per square yard of new pavement. So, you know, it takes a little work, but we're committed to doing it because it's the right thing and it'll deliver the most cost-effective projects for both departments if we do it that way. So, you know, it's a project that an approach that is going to take continual work. We've always got to, you know, roll up our sleeves, and every week we meet for a couple hours to talk about coordination, and that's what it takes to get these projects rolling out together.
And Mr. DeGroot,
yes.
How far out are you and Tucson Water planning? Because Tucson Water showed us a 5-year, but I would think you'd go 10 or something.
My charge is to repave every neighborhood street in 10 years. And we started out with Mr. Burke's commission looking at how we would do that. We had an initial a 1-year plan that was just to get the ball rolling. That's kind of where we found the problems and realized how important it was to collaborate. And now we're in what we're calling phase one. We basically have a 1-year program and then 3 3-year programs through the 10-year life of the Prop 411 effort. We are looking at trying to address the roads that are in the poorest condition earliest, but we're doing it across the whole city. So, you know, it's a bit of a balancing act to do that because not all streets and not all wards are the same. So what we're doing is a phase at a time. We're about ready to start our next 3-year tranche or phase two program, but that's probably 2 years out. We're only into the first year of phase one. But we need to have that forward look so that we can begin the coordination with Tucson Water. And one of the things that we want to be able to do is where we have run into areas where Tucson Water is going to be doing some improvements. And, you know, it's not in the time horizon that we had identified for it. We need to be able to swap out projects from later phases to backfill the effort. So we continue to make improvements at a, we need to use the taxpayers' money as it's coming in. So that way we can get the best prices on things. Inflation is going to happen, and the earlier we get it done, the less we'll be negatively impacted by the effects of inflation. So, sorry, that's kind of a big dump, but hopefully I answered your question.
And how do you guys notify the public? Because I think that's one of the biggest things I hear. The public goes and looks at the map for DTM mm-hmm. and says, okay, I'm identified as needing, you know, streets paved or needing water, you know, whatever. But it's not updated very often, so people can even get an idea. So that's real frustrating to the public.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, from a staff standpoint, we're keeping those maps up to date. You know, they're constantly updating the maps. But the outreach is probably something that we could look at doing a little differently and a little more proactively. We'll do it. You know, what we do in different wards is different, even because that's a ward preference on how we go out to things. But in terms of when a project is moving forward, you know, as we move towards construction, we begin mass mailings, and those generally occur about 30 days before contractors will move into a neighborhood. We'll know a little further in advance than that, but that's all reflected on our maps. But we spend a tremendous amount of money doing mailings right now. That's something that, you know, if there's a more effective way to reach out, you know, we would like to explore that, particularly if you have some suggestions.
Well, it's got to be more than 30 days. I mean, my neighborhood hasn't been redone in, I think, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to know in 30 days that it's going to happen, because we all have to cut trees and things, because it's my understanding they're going to come through and the equipment's so big that they're going to chop down a lot of street trees. So there's a lot of concern. So people need to know as far in advance, and we'd rather all be looking at the maps. So if you guys are updating maps, you should be trying to post them somewhere. We can understand if it's changing every couple of weeks or whatever, but right now we have no data. You know, it just says you're in phase one, and that's it. But anyhow.
Well, let me speak to that as a member of the other commission, and I'll jump in here, Jim. I think that our commission is hard at work, and being very transparent in terms of the maps and the plans. It may be a question of how to find it, but you know, from my perspective on the commission that's overseeing 411, there's a lot of effort to communicate with the public, plan ahead, and as Jim has said, do these in tranches that cover a span of years in certain phases. So
yeah, and I'm not saying that they're not doing that, but like you said, maybe we just can't find it, because we keep asking and we just can't find it.
What
and neither can our
talking
council
about?
People.
Yeah. Which neighborhood are you talking about, Commissioner?
Garden District is where I'm at. But, you know, so we contact the ward office, and, you know, so it's the same thing mm-hmm. with all the projects. I think no matter what department it's in, it's hard finding the information.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate your comment on that. And Garden District is one that I'm very familiar with. The section that we're looking at, I think you're talking about, is the we call it the Pinecrest edition. Frontier
that.
Edition. But it's
you know
the
it's
area
funny because mm-hmm. we've never heard that term before, so we didn't know what it was. Yeah, we're 1 square mile, so we're looking at the whole. Except one of those quadrants mm-hmm. got paved because there was a Southwest Gas Project in it all over. But I don't want to just focus on mine. I'm just saying in general, we cannot, you know, people cannot find the information. They're getting frustrated. So any way to improve it is a great idea.
I appreciate that. And with the neighborhood that is bounded by Grant, Pima, Alvernon, and Columbus, if that's the area you're referring to, that's an area that we've been actively engaging in conversations with Tucson Water about, because there are vulnerabilities in the waterline situation there. We've not put a date to it because we're trying to figure out what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. I guess my question in exploring this, and thank you, Scott, for the presentation. My view is that we're here to help. And we're operating on a high level of ignorance. So what we hear over in 411 is that there are 10 to 12 projects that recently have been placed on a hold, if that's a phrase to use here. And so it's starting to impact and DTM is doing a shuffling to try to find places where money can go that don't interfere with the water lines, et cetera, and so on. But fundamentally, where are the friction points? Do you have enough funding? Do we need to be advocating for more money for these projects? Because one of the things that strikes me is you don't really know the magnitude of your problem in terms of the capital investments that are needed.
So when it comes to the water system, as I mentioned, if you look at the numbers we have there, I mean, over that five-year period, that's over $100 million worth of infrastructure investment every five-year period just in the distribution system. And not every line needs to be replaced. We're gonna make sure we get as much life as we can out of every single asset and get every dollar and every penny out of it that our customers put into it. So we're not going to replace everything overnight. We're not going to replace the entire system. This is going to be a continuous maintenance effort, probably in perpetuity over time, just like pavement replacement, right? Jim's going to go out and replace the pavement out here in Alameda, you know, and in 10 years from now, we're going to have to do it again. These things don't last forever. It's painting the Golden Gate Bridge. We keep going and going. And once we build something, we do have to take care of it and maintain it. So this is part of the process, and this is what we're doing. And I think, you know, well, I know we're actually working very well together now moving forward. So everything that we put together, the teams that we have, we're marching forward. As Jim said, you know, at the beginning, I think it was a little rocky. We got, you know, swarmed with a whole bunch of requests. Hey, we're going to do this. And we had no idea some of these things were coming. Now we know. We've really put, you know, sat down. We've had, I can't remember. I have the number somewhere. I can't remember if it's 60 or 70 different meetings over time with DTM staff, and really just how do we lay this out? How does this best work for everybody? What are the procurement options? What are the design options? What can we defer? What can we not defer to make this work for, again, not just water, not DTM, but the city as a whole? And that's our goal, is to make this successful for everyone. So I think we're doing this. You know, I'm sure we can get more information out there on maps. We try to do the best we can too in communicating our projects as they come forward. And again, we also try to combine some of those efforts too. So when we put something out, we know pavement's going to follow. We're happy to throw that on the letters we send out to the communities too, and get that information out there. So it truly is a shared effort. And it's turning into a very successful project too, and a success story over time.
Great. You know, I hate to end this, but we're over our amount of time. But you guys you gentlemen provided some very interesting, helpful information. So we thank you very much. And okay.
I just have one more question. When it comes to the combining work, is there a central coordinating facility?
Do you mean which one takes primary control of it, or who's
is managing? There some kind of overlooking it, where the project's going, where you can cooperate, and where you should cooperate?
It's ongoing conversations. We don't have any facility. Yeah. We have a standing working meeting every week where we go through our respective priorities. We find out, you know, what progress has been done on, you know, say, low, you know, valve sweeps, or, you know, where am I with identifying contractors, whatever it happens to be. You know, we have an ongoing interchange of information.
Each of you have your priorities of what you're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to basically determine which priorities will be worked together?
So that's what's discussed at a lot of the meetings, right? As we lay this out, now that Jim has, they have a three-year plan. So we know what their priorities are, and we can go back and put our priorities on top of theirs and see where things match up. If there are things that need to be moved or coordinated, we do that. And that's what we've been doing. We have, as I mentioned earlier, we have an entirely new GIS platform that we've developed where all of our project managers, our teams can put their information on there so they can go look at any given time. Oh, look, DTM is going to replace a bridge, or DTM is going to do some paving in this area. I need to reach out to this project manager to talk about this. How can we coordinate? So this is information that was not available years ago. Nobody, you know, so these are huge steps in the digital age, in the everything. So, we're doing I can't say enough how proud I am of both of these teams working together. and really making this happen, because it is a lot of work. And again, kudos to both staffs for everything that they're doing. And I think if you give it some time, and now that we've gotten through kind of that first year or two, things are going to smooth out now. And as I mentioned, we're going to start a lot of work ahead of time on these projects that we know are coming. Before we didn't. Now we're going to have answers and plans ready to go sooner rather than later.
Okay. All right. I think we're going to call it on this. Is that good with you, Commissioner Burke, too?
Oh, yes. I appreciate it. Okay. And I want to close by saying thank you to both Scott and Jim. My reason for bringing this forward was not to create problems, but I think to gain understanding. Jim, I would think that this is something that our commission would be helpful to learn if there was some time for a session that would kind of give the diagrams that we've seen, because now it illuminates the difficulties. And frankly, I'm still not clear on capital budgets, but we're needing to come back to that. It's not something that we have time to do.
I'd like to add my thanks too for the presentation.
And I got to say that I haven't seen a road paving that's been unearthed by a water project in years. So somebody's doing something right.
So that's what we want to hear.
Yeah,
I think people really notice that a lot. So yeah.
We're trying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nobody likes
Thanks
that.
Again.
All right.
We really appreciate it. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Nice seeing you. Okay, so moving on to the next number 5 is a subcommittee report on internal audit function. We're not going to go 45 minutes, but did you guys get, let's see, you have a printed copy.
I have it printed up.
Commissioner Burke, did you get the, did you get the subcommittee report? Okay.
I did, but Frank, to be honest with you, I was planning to come down.
Oh, that's okay.
And look at it, but then I didn't have a place to go, and it's been so long since I've been in the room.
Sarah's going to put it up on the screen. Now, some of this, I got to tell you, I don't have all my references for. So some of it might not be fully accurate, but I just started getting information on paper. I've been looking over all of the, like, trying to look at the what's in the city charter.
I'm so sorry. There's a lot of meetings getting approved.
Oh, okay.
So but if you see it, I apologize.
That's okay. So I tried to put some information on paper because reading, and I think we're going to have a separate meeting for this, if that would work for you two commissioners, because there's a lot of things to go over. So number one, it starts with what are we supposed to be doing? And then we're supposed to be monitoring what's going on with the internal audit function. And then as I read more and more about the different, because Sarah sent me a bunch of, and maybe you sent that to everybody, but she sent me all the things I should have gotten when I signed on to this commission, but I never got them. And so the only thing I'd ever seen was the bylaws. And maybe something out of, I saw the charter somewhere along the line. But there's also another document. I forget what some of the other documents are right off the bat.
Was it the reports to the mayor and council?
Or there's some kind of a procedure. There's a bunch of stuff. And so, but one of the things we're supposed to be doing is we're supposed to be giving a report to the mayor and council about 2 times a year.
Yeah.
But not on the CAFR or the ACFR. It's supposed to be on the internal audit function and how it's functioning, or in this case, not functioning because there isn't any internal auditors. And so do you know the last time that you, because I just don't remember. So do you remember the last time you gave a report on the internal audit function? Or is it always just been this, the CAFR report? Because I don't know how it slipped into that.
Well, I think we found the last one was in 2022.
I saw that, but that was not on the internal audit function.
That was last report I saw.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll look into it.
So I want to get back on track with our commission with the report we're supposed to give Mayor and Council. Plus, it says in there that we will be put on the agenda if we requested it, I think. We'll be put on the agenda to talk about it, which is something that you were talking about at one of the previous meetings. Can we get on the agenda with Mayor and Council?
Sure. When I was on the commission before,
And you know what? In the 4 years that I've been on, or close to it, I've been on this commission, I know we've never done that. And so I'm like, okay, now that we're lacking membership, partly, but getting back to the reason for the internal audit functional review, there's a lot of things that are not in the city charter that regulate what the internal auditors are supposed to do at the city. And there are a lot of other cities and municipalities are doing a heck of a lot more, or they appear to be, than what I see that we're doing. But like I said, I haven't dug into, you know, I can see the internal audits we've never actually even read the reports for any audits that have been done by the auditors.
No.
Yeah. And so
we didn't. And when I was on, I was on for 8 years when we had a full commission.
Yeah.
And
never did it.
Never saw that.
And so I'm just kind of looking at an outline right now of what are the audit requirements? Well, state of Arizona has financial requirements. The charter, I got to find it again. I tried looking through it the other day, but I can't find what I'm looking for. There's a very specific paragraph in there that talks about what the IAPC is supposed to do, and it's really pretty vague. But as far as what the audit requirements are, I don't know where that is. So it's going to be this subcommittee report thing.
I have a question before that. Do we have sufficient manpower, person power, and support power to be able to do that kind of function?
Do what function?
Check out the internal audit, do the other things that the commission is supposed to be facing. How do you form a subcommittee when you've only got three staff?
I know. Staff? Yeah, I know. And so, yeah, that's, well, there's over 80 commission openings. And so that's, if we could pull together a report, well, I don't know. I don't know what the first thing to do would be, but there's two issues. One is our lack of commissioners, and two, what is the internal audit function supposed to be doing? And so do we even have enough information
My question is, unless we've been asked or we make it a condition, is it our function to determine what the internal audit is supposed to be doing?
Not what they're supposed to be doing, but
or what they are doing.
Report on their effectiveness and stuff, effectiveness basically, and then provide input. Is it effective? Is it not? Is it? It's supposed
How
to.
How do we know?
But you'd have to read through the reports and you'd have to look at. So like right now, it's obviously not effective because there's no auditors. I mean, that's what I'd say. Yeah.
All right. I can only say that it was when I was on the commission previously, and that doesn't mean it's anything great, right? But we would get the reports the same as we get now from Aaron, but we never were called upon to do an audit on those reports.
It's not exactly an audit, but yeah, I know what you mean. You'd have to read them, but you could also look at their schedule, what they're auditing, you know. Is it meeting what they said they're supposed to be doing? I mean, it might not.
Yeah, but we were never asked to do that as a commission.
If you can show, do you have that document?
Yes. Well, the last time we met was in November, and we talked about the role, functions, everything of the IAPC. And I believe I put the charter on there. I put everything that I gave for onboarding.
Yes, so that's what you gave.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like a packet of all the onboarding that what new members coming in should receive, which so you didn't get.
Do you have that one of those that talks? I think it's the BPP back. Or there was some
back
procedural thing, And it actually talks about the report that the IAPC is supposed to be giving the mayor and council twice a year. And it did specify in there what we were supposed to be reporting on. So maybe we could, if we could find that, we could.
Let me share this because I have a folder for the IAPC.
And like I said, I'd never seen it. So I was really surprised. The only thing I ever saw was
the page, process, policy.
So
if you want, I could go.
Just look at it, probably process policy. Look at that second one.
The second one.
I don't think that was it. Yeah, there you go. Okay. This, I don't know where this came from. Count, prepare, expand analysis, studies, or reports for forwarding to mayor and council. Member may request commission conduct expanded analysis, request for staff. Okay, go to the next page. I don't remember. That was it. Okay, so it's not in here.
And the second was approved by commission in December 2009 meeting.
Right.
Before we
not this one. So
okay, not this
let's
one. Okay.
Open that top one again.
Before we did an audit or an investigation or look into things, it had to be formally. There wasn't a standard that was already in the book to tell us what to do. It had to be either a request from mayor and council or the city manager.
Well, so this
or from the commission itself to determine.
Right.
But it had to be a formal request for us to do that investigation.
Right, but like this one, and like I said, I don't know where these documents, because this, I don't know what the order is. Like the city charter is at the top. And I'm not sure where this is.
This one's on
down from.
This is on the city clerk's webpage.
Yeah.
Underneath the BCCs on IAPC. And it scrolls down. I think it's item number 6 on the IAPC data page. It's called data page. And this is where you're going to find it.
Okay. So this one only says that we're going to give them a report. But
right.
One of the other ones I read said that we were going to.
There's a.
Reviewed by comment on direction, or upon a majority vote of the commissioners to provide independent appraisal of city programs policies. Yeah, that's right out of our bylaws,
right.
I think. Mm-hmm. Upon majority vote, regulations, no, this isn't it because it talked about the internal audits.
Okay, let me look real quick because this is all that I had here. And 6-month draft.
Look at that draft report. Information provided, internal, okay. Let's see. City's independent activities from then to then. No,
that's are you looking at the procedures? This is the actual, like,
yeah.
Right.
Going through the procedure.
Yeah, this stuff.
There's open meeting laws, it's the ordinance.
That one, we'd have to cruise through there and find out.
This page, I memorized it correctly.
And it just says, I think, just exactly what we saw.
Yeah, it's what your function and role is.
Sample, no. How about sample? Okay, so this is yet another functions and duties. To review and provide comment to the city manager. I'm looking at 10A-122, number
122
one.
122 right here.
Provide comments, city manager, and mayor and council relating to the city's annual audit plan. On direction of the mayor and council or upon majority vote, to provide independent appraisal of city programs, policies, and functions. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Examine financial reports, various records, procedures, compliance with ordinances, regulations, policies. So, city's internal control structure and recommend improvements. I still think there was some.
I don't think it was ever our responsibility to look over the shoulder of the individual auditors and they're doing things.
It's not looking at the individual auditor. It's looking at the audit program. The whole program that the city has.
It's expressed right here on the limitations of power.
What are you looking at? Commission as members may incur. No. Shall provide the commission with information document. Once a month, not less than every 6 months, more frequently upon request by mayor and council. So yeah, that, what was A? Because I don't know what section. It was just commissioner served as a chair. No. So that one's just talking about the report's frequency. So anyhow, there's some stuff somewhere.
We used to get very complete reports from when the auditor was doing UJEP. They would tell how and what they went through and that, but that was basically a report to us, and we didn't have to do a report on that. That was just we weren't asked to question or to look into it. We were just given that information.
Right, but if we don't look at the internal audit function, what's the internal audit what's the IAPC supposed to do? You know, I mean, we can just pop around on topics over and over again. It makes no sense. And so,
well, it's the popping around on topics. If we are asked to look into the function, as we did with the Code Bureau,
but nobody's asking for anything.
That's true. That's one of the problems I see. But I mean, we were asked to look into the code enforcement.
Yeah.
And we did, and we had a subcommittee, and we did. You guys, I got in too late to take the ride around, but you guys did the ride arounds and everything, and turned in a report based on that. That's what I always thought the IAPC was supposed to do.
Now, if you look at, and so what I did with this report, so this is kind of like what I want everybody to think about is, What should we be doing? Because it's not really in our bylaws. It says the same thing over and over again. Mayor and council tells you to do this, or, you know, a majority vote by us. You know, we need to be, I mean, in my opinion, we need to be focusing more on the internal audit function. But first, we should take a look and see what other cities are doing. So what I did was I just wrote a little brief overview of, you know, City of Tucson has two auditors, blah, blah, blah. And then they have to be CPA experience. I think I remember reading in the job descriptions that people gave us. But things I've uncovered that I don't see at the city are various. There's other cities. So it got chopped out of here somehow. I don't know why that happened. But anyhow. There's currently other cities that have a lot more. They're doing a lot more with their internal audit programs. So you can look at, and I thought I had some references here, but somehow they got out of here. City of Phoenix, City of El Paso, City of Albuquerque, City of Scottsdale, Pinal County. They're all have audit. Oh, there they are, right there. Okay, they all have audit programs. They all post their internal audit schedules. They all post all of their audit reports. So I, you know, there's a big question about what do we want to be doing? Well, we don't have anything to look at, in my opinion.
Well, I did identify, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did identify the difference between the IAPC and the different roles in performance and auditing regarding, remember the presentation in November. When we kind of discuss the role and the functions of the IAPC. And I did identify the different functions when I presented about the role and performance. If you want, I could, you know, get this and I could send it to the commissioner so you could kind of see kind of the difference between advisory and operational role. So the IAPC is the advisory role,
right,
and the internal auditors, like within the city, is the operational role.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you want, I could send that to the commissioners and
And then we can I think we should discuss this at the next meeting too, because we're going to continue to just flounder around, and that's kind of been my observation for the last 3 years. Is that we're bouncing around on topics, but what value are we adding to anything?
Commissioners, I apologize to you and to the group, but I have to leave. So.
And we can keep going because we have
quorum. You have quorum still, at least two, but I need to since we're recording, just to let you know that you adjourned at 4:25, Commissioner Clark.
Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you for attending.
Right. I'm sorry to leave so early.
You want to take a water? Or...
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, Commissioner Burke, will yes. I just want to, what do you have an opinion on what you think the commission should be doing?
Well, yeah, I do, but it may not be the right opinion.
Well,
I'll share it.
Okay.
So I'm just going to take the example of what we just heard. Mm-hmm. I initiated that out of a concern sitting on the Prop 411 commission that, you know, there were delays occurring within that program because of Tucson Water's inability to keep up with the projects that concern the road pavement. And we found out why that is. We learned a little bit about that here today, but all we had was a presentation. What are we going to do with that data? Are we going to try to dig down? For example, did we not hear that Tucson Water has no picture of what the total capital needs for Tucson Water are?
Well, or it's not predictable. Well, they're using an AI model, so you'd think it would be predictable. But
I can't imagine that they wouldn't know or shouldn't be an effort made to establish that. I mean, I'm not a CPA individual or a financial person, but how do you operate without knowing what your capital needs are?
But see, this is a topic that, okay, why don't the internal auditors do an internal audit of Tucson Water of their processes and their, you know, people audit the heck out of the budget. It's not about budget because they budget at 27 million. Did they spend 27 million or less? You know, that's what they audit here. And right. So, but we need a focus. I totally agree with you, but the only thing that we've done for the almost 4 years I've been on this commission is somebody comes and they go, hey, let's talk about the police this time. Right. Let's talk about this time. Right. It's bouncing around with no focus. And that, like you're thinking could happen, we have people come and do a presentation and then that's over. Okay, that's done.
Right.
There's no value, except we learned something that we could probably tell other people. But what value is that to the mayor and council to know if their departments are functioning correctly?
Well, here's how they would know. Here's how they would learn from what we might do. And I'm using this as a hypothetical example. Well, we just learned, A, that Tucson Water has no even approximate estimate based on data of what their total capital needs are. Number one. Two, spending $27 million a year annually on capital improvements for the water system.
Yeah, that one is very suspicious since he said they had $1 billion of assets. It would probably take $1 billion to fix everything. Well, you wouldn't fix it in
No, you wouldn't fix it in a year, but you'd have...
No, you know, you wouldn't fix it in 20 or 30 years if you only spend...
Right. You're spending $27 million. $27 million is inadequate. Number one. I mean, I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but that's
what it appears.
Doesn't the mayor and council benefit from our observation of that and the recommendation that we look at that? And I'm not sure we have enough information yet to get there, but we've opened the door and we've peered in. And I think, as a personal opinion, not the opinion of this commission, that there's an issue there that is not being adequately addressed. So it needs to move up on the agenda for mayor and council and for the city manager and the budgets.
It could be. I mean, I totally agree, but that would be something we could put on our 6-month report. We had an interview with Tucson Water.
Yeah.
And this is what we thought. Now, the other thing, though, is auditing, I mean, I'm going to go back to, we should just, I kind of want to do an assessment of the internal audit program, because we had one commissioner who only stayed like a month, and right. She brought up a lot of questions about what is the commission supposed to be doing. And we're supposed to, you know, according to everyone else's, what they're doing. And actually, I need to look up like City of Phoenix, City of Scottsdale, find out what is the name of their commission that is overseeing their audit function, and see if they have them like we have them. So do they have something equivalent to the IAPC in Scottsdale, you know, or Phoenix or Albuquerque or whatever? Because, but if you look on any of these websites, they list all of their internal audits that are going to be conducted. They list all the ones they did conduct, and they have the reports on there. So the city now has, and the way they're selecting what to audit and what to look at is based on a risk analysis. And I've never seen a risk analysis here associated with the internal audit function of as to what it is they're auditing. We have the same internal audit plan every year. We see the same internal audit plan. However, they do something here, and I can't remember the terminology they used, but they're basically, I can't remember, I don't know if you've run across this, Aaron would know. They don't call them internal audits exactly. They're not compliance audits. They are audits to go dig through the procedures and the processes, and I believe they interview people and everything, but they never write non-compliances that then have to be answered with corrective actions because they weren't following procedures and processes. They say that everything is a consulting opinion audit. So they then work, once they do the audit, and whoever requested it, for whatever department they requested it for, or whatever process within the department, they give them a report, I think, that then says, okay, we went over everything, and here's the things that we suggest you do. Now, so we or anybody else has no idea if these departments are even following their own processes. And without following the processes, you can't possibly deliver the services and a quality service. It would be an accident if they didn't follow the processes. So I know what you're saying, but it's still a shotgun approach to, if you hadn't come along and suggested Tucson Water, we'd be talking about some other thing that somebody just said, let's go look at this. And I don't see any of that. I don't see it as, people just don't do it. You know, and I don't know how the other commissions, maybe I should watch some other ones and find out how they're coming up with their topics, because I'm not sure how they're doing it either. So I know there's a commission, well, like pedestrian safety, they disbanded. I don't know if that was a commission or just a committee. They disbanded it because they didn't have enough people. But we obviously have pedestrian safety issues because so maybe, you know, maybe this, I should just go through and look at what some of the other commissions are doing and what they're supposed to be doing and look a little bit more into that. But I think these two things go hand in hand. What are we supposed to be doing? And what are the internal auditors at the city supposed to be doing?
Got it.
And I've got to look up these references that I found. But running across this, I'm looking on the City of Tucson's website. They have very little, if anything, about their internal audits that they do on their website. So when you're trying, when you're looking at, you know, like cities or what's the trend other cities are doing, Tucson's not doing any of it, or it's just not on their website. They also have other things called, one's called the Yellow Book, one's called the Red Book. They are standard auditing guidelines for government entities. We don't appear to be using those, but I don't know because we haven't talked to anybody. So generally accepted government auditing standards. Has Tucson even got an effective audit program that is keeping pace with other modern cities? I don't think so. From what you read in the charter, even our function is so gray. It's not defined, and it needs to be better defined. What should we be doing? And as the other commissioner who is with us for just a month, we're supposed to be an independent audit performance commission, not taking orders from mayor and council. None of the other commissions are, I just attended the planning commission right before Christmas. And actually I did the online one this month, or just in January. They're not taking direction from the mayor and council. What they're doing is they're reviewing all of the changes to the zoning that's being proposed, and they're providing feedback to the people that are to PDSD who's doing the zoning changes. Now, PDSD is the department who is taking their marching orders from the mayor and council. Here, we got this project for you to do. And so here we are. We're an independent commission, but we're not really. We're taking the orders from mayor and council, but we haven't been because nobody's given us anything to work on. Yeah.
Nobody's paying attention to us.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff, but even if they were paying attention to us, they still don't have to give us anything to do. And besides, it's an independent committee. So
I appreciate everything you've said. We just had a half hour presentation on what is potentially a financial, I mean, it is clearly within our wheelhouse in a general sense. It's a financial issue, right? For the city, of capital issue?
You know what? That's another thing. Independent Audit Commission can look at financials, and that is what the documentation of bylaws and everything else seems to have originally focused on financials. We're not CPAs. They have independent auditors that they pay to come in and look at all of their financial stuff and everything. We need to start getting away from that because we look at the ACFR every year, the financial report. I'm not a CPA, and there's nothing in our requirements that say we have to be a CPA. Right. Besides, everybody's gone through that thing and looked at it and batted it back and forth, and here we are. In audit world, we say, and here we are to bayonet at the wounded. It's not as value added as saying looking at a process. So, for instance, you're looking at the water, Tucson Water, saying what is their process for developing their capital budget? Right. How many years do they project out? What's the data they're using in order to determine this? Looks to me like they're using almost the same number every year. However, it's getting less in the future. Right. And so, yeah, that made no sense. 2 years was less than it was. So maybe the tail's wagging the dog with, we've got the overall city budget and they get their chunk and nobody really cares what the needs are. They're just giving them the same amount every year because this is how many people you have. This is how many projects you've been able to do historically. And this is what you're getting. Because I know that's what they do, for instance, in code enforcement. I've got 10 inspectors. Every year I've looked at their results and the city just sent out, here's how many things we've done that came out in NewsNet in the last few weeks. And here's how much stuff we've done. We filled 100,000 potholes. We filled, we did X amount of water pipes. That's just I call it a production report. Here's how much I did.
Right.
Now, what do you need to do? What did you do? Where's the planning on what you're going to do? What are the goals? They don't appear to have, of course, I don't know this because I don't work in the departments. They appear to not have quality metrics based on maybe time and, callback rate. So, for instance, fill a pothole. It's taking over 5 weeks now to get a pothole filled. Now, before, they used to tell us, we're doing those in a week, or 2 weeks or whatever. No, they backed off telling us anything. But what is the goal? And are they meeting the goal? And if not, why not? None of that information is coming out to the public. And so if they're talking about it internally, that's great. Are they meeting the budget? I think, from what I've seen, a lot of times they seem happy if they spend the budget and they don't go over the budget. they may, you know, they just generally, departments may not be concerned with the amount of time it took to resolve an issue and what is the cost per issue. And so I call up and I report, you know, a pothole. And, okay, they've got 10,000 reports. What's the average cost of each of those maintenance reports that they took? Or what's the average time it took to fulfill that maintenance request? It's just focused on, I've got X amount of people, X amount of contractors, and X amount of potholes. They're disregarding the rest of it. So I'm looking for improvement. And a lot of people are looking for improvement. And there's a lot of talk right now about maybe the city needs to be paying closer attention to looking for improvement. Can we do more with the same pot of money? I don't know. So those are the kinds of inputs we need to be giving. You know, so I agree with you. We could, we can certainly, I think immediately we need to start figuring out what's our report to the mayor and council going to be. And I'd like to do it every 6 months, and I'd like to be in front of them, even if we only get 5 minutes. But what are we going to say? So so that's what I kind of wanted to hash out in the subcommittee meeting.
Right.
And it's a combination of, hey, we can have topics just come up whenever you see the need. Totally fine. But generally speaking, what's going to be our function? I think it's totally been off track for quite a while. And it's,
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. But I guess what I'm trying to do is narrow down to this question. And we've had a half hour presentation. We went over time. We learned some things. What do we do with it?
Well, you know what? We would just write up a brief summary. You know, we had an interview with Tucson Water. The focus of the talk was capital. Capital budget, and also how they relate to the pavement
projects. Yes.
Projects for Prop 411, and we learned a lot. You know, it's good that they're overlapping. You know, their maps, and they're talking every week. But you know what I would want to know is that in a procedure somewhere? Because as soon as one of those people changes, one retires or one gets moved up or out or whatever, are they still going to do that? Because is it written in a procedure? Probably not. It's just something they've been doing. Right. And so what's the procedure? What do they want to do? And how are they going to make sure that keeps occurring? Because one thing
I get that. But the larger question, I mean, the pressure that's come on the city water department, Tucson Water, is a result of a set of road projects that is increasing the Tucson Water Department's exposure to expense, capital expense.
Yeah.
Because we're repaving roads and we're damaging pipelines on the way. I mean, it's a complicated thing. But, okay, an alarm bell needs to go off.
Right.
The concern of the 411 Commission is it's going to start to slow down our projects. And so
it already has.
Right. Well, they've shuffled. In the early stages of this project, they've shuffled and moved projects around. But pretty soon they're going to run out of ability to shuffle.
Exactly.
As time goes on, the public is going to have an expectation that all the roads within the city of Tucson that are residential are going to be paved within 10 years.
Right, and it won't happen.
It won't happen.
If they continue on. Well, you know what? Would you be willing to write your summary that could go to the executive level, mayor and council? And so
I'd be glad to work on that. But I don't know that I have all the answers yet, honestly.
You don't need the answers. You really just need to point out the problem. Because there's no way, so I've had Tucson Water in my neighborhood on Columbus between it's been between Pima and Fort Lowell. They've been there now for a couple of months, and they set up all the barricades and all this stuff and everything. Right. And all that stuff costs money. And then, but the work is happening way down at Fort Lowell, or it's happening north of Grant somewhere. And so, but they, so that's taken, I mean, it, DTM could have come in and paved that whole area in the amount of time that Tucson Water's been there. And I'm not saying that they would have. All I'm saying is that you're exactly right. A Tucson Water project probably takes 4, 5, 6 times longer than a paving project.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we learned here.
And they'll never be able, they didn't really mention what's their timeline like. Is it okay that in 6 years I'm not going to get to this water main, so let's go ahead and pave it? I don't know if those guys can make that determination, or if mayor and council has to tell them, or the commission, the 411 commission. There's probably nothing in writing that says what's the cutoff. You know, we can't wait forever to pave these streets because people are tripping. They're, you know.
Well, I'd be glad to consider it. What I'd like to do is talk to Jim DeGroot again.
Yeah.
Just to get a sense of where we're at. And then I'd be glad to come back and have a further discussion of it.
Well, yeah. And I think if you want to take some notes about what you know, you've heard, and then I would be more than happy to use that as one of our 6 month.
Yeah, I got your point. Yeah.
6 month reviews because we need to get back in front of the mayor and council. They think we don't exist, and they don't put a priority on trying to find us new members, and they should be. And I'm like, this has got to get better. And the other commissions are having the same problem. There's a lot of commissions that are low, and you know what their answer is at the mayor and council? I've heard floating around, well, let's get rid of them. And well, so, you know, no, the commissions are the public oversight. And so,
Sarah, may I ask you a question? Excuse me, Ms. Pollock.
Sure.
This was it. With respect to the information that we learned today, is there an opportunity for you to staff a draft of what we learned and the issues that are identified?
Yeah, so that's what I was wanting. I just gave to Chairperson Pollock right now. She posed a question about the reporting and what's required of it. Is that correct? That's what you were posting?
Yeah. Yes.
And then I did get information back regarding that, the procedure, what's expected of the IAPC. So I got a couple of documents as examples. So the attachments that I got, and I'm going to present right now, it's going to show a couple of active reports and examples of a report on the review of an annual audit plan. Also examples of mayor and council communication that accompanies the items as they get added to the agenda. So this is kind of an overview of like the steps, visually what it's supposed to kind of look like. We could always alter it a bit, but essentially it's supposed to stay within that formatting. Traditionally, the City of Tucson staff would put a lot of this together for the chair, and then the chair and commission would review and approve and prepare the cover letter portion. Mm. So we'll prepare and compile all of the documents. I, like the staff liaison, traditionally would work with the chairperson to draft the cover letter. And then staff would get it to the mayor on the mayor and council agenda. So you could either one, just bring it forth as an agenda. You don't have to be in person, or you could be there in person and present it. And that's usually up to the chair. Usually, traditionally, I believe the chair is the one that comes forth in person if she or he wants to present in front of mayor and council. But if you want, I could go ahead and show you what I compiled so far regarding the visual, how it's supposed to go. Let me go and open it.
So you know what? We were just looking at, I had looked up Chapter 10, Article 11, 10A-22. One thing we're supposed to do, review and provide comment relating to the city's annual audit plan. And maybe that's where I was kind of interpreting that a little bit. But I think that this is where I want to go with what the city is looking at themselves. year to year, and then write up something we can present to mayor and council in the report that talks about what are other cities doing, and that they need to think about being more progressive with our a lot of other cities by expanding their internal audit program.
Okay. Yeah. Can you scroll that for me, Sarah, in terms of?
So this is just to report to the mayor and council that
but you don't have the report
time will be
there.
Set aside to report on the following
ECCs.
And so that's how it usually looks like. So that way they get notified.
Do you have an example of something that we early on did as a report?
This is one.
Okay, there we go.
I've never seen this either.
So can report on the annual audit plan. So before the new fiscal year starts, usually it is, wise to go ahead and compile the documentation, draft your report on it, just like you see here, and present it to mayor and council. So this is kind of the report on the review of the annual audit plan, just like our assistant city manager and CFO Anna Rosenberry, how she came on, and BSD director also as well, Angel, they came on and they kind of gave you an overview of the works of the annual audit plan. So you would take that, you would kind of review it, you would compile a report if you in this kind of style, and you could present it to the mayor and council on your review of that annual report and provide advisory role suggestions on what you identified.
Now, it's interesting. I don't know if this has been done since 2019.
I see. That's the last chairperson.
But if you go back up that table, there were four internal auditors in 2012 and 2014. And then I don't know what assigned means. Authorized two, assigned, because they authorized three, but they only had one, three, two. Yeah. It's gone the route of a lot of other things at the city. No, I don't think we need that. I don't know what they were doing anyhow, maybe. So they just cut the budget. And so, but it's very, I think we can use some of that same argument, actually. But say, let's look at what other cities are doing now. Okay. And they always have this exact same internal audit schedule. It's the schedule. It's always the same. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Okay.
From an auditor point of view. Now, I'm an auditor for a living. So I have opinions on what a good audit program should be and how you would determine it. But it is normally risk-based. Where are our biggest risks? And could be money, people changing, all kinds of stuff.
Well, I guess the risk here that I've identified returning to the water issue is the inadequacy of the capital budget to meet the needs of 411.
Right.
Sarah, if that were the topic, would you do a draft of a report on that based on the information that we could edit?
Yeah, so what I could do is I could compile all of the documentations that you would like to add to the report or put on the report. I could draft it, send the draft over to the chair for review, and it could be presented to the commissioners. So that way you could review it and approve how it's written. And then afterwards, I will work, the staff liaison usually works with the chair of IAPC to draft a cover letter. And then if you accept how it's written, then we will put it on the agenda. And that's what we have right here, the process of how I would go about it once we approve everything. So this is just the communications.
So I think how I'd like to see the report is it'll be the same kind of format. And I would like that one report from 2017, because it said, this one, June 6, 2018.
I could send, if it's all right with the commissioners, I could go ahead and send this over with the information of what you're actually seeing. as well as before what we discussed about your roles and functions comparative to an internal auditor, I could send that too. So that way you could just have it on file.
Because part of the report is going to be this exact thing. Back in June of 2018, the commission recommended, you know, a greater investment basically in, and it never occurred. And so, I could go into talking about what other cities are doing, not a giant amount of detail, but just say, you know, City of Tucson has a $2.4 billion budget. And how are the processes being reviewed? Who's doing that if you don't have proper internal audit function capability?
If I may, regarding going back to Commissioner Burke's question about what you learned about regarding Tucson Water today, what you could do is draft it as that 6-month report on your actions. And so you could do that just like right here.
Well, I think we're going to add it. We're going to put a review of the internal audit.
Well, what you could do that and then maybe do the annual report on like, okay, you looked at the annual report that as it was presented, and this is what you find, and that's your annual report. Did you want to add this, like what you found on Tucson Water, to the annual reporting to
I think it would be a good
council?
Idea. Okay. Yeah, yes, because we could use it as an example. Okay. You know, we could kind of flow into it and say, as an example, we had an interview with Tucson Water. The information appears to, you know.
What I would suggest is a lack of capital.
What I would suggest
is that we get a draft from Sarah, our staff, and then look at it and say, well, maybe we need to flesh this out. Maybe we need another session or meet some specific questions to refer over to Tucson Water or to Department of Transportation Mobility and get a fuller picture so that we're not just skimming the surface, but we've really dug down a little bit.
But the thing is, I would totally, you know, love to do that. However, we should just be asking for an audit, an internal audit of Tucson Water and DTM, and mayor and council can authorize an external auditor company or whatever to come in and do the audit. It doesn't have to be internally done, especially since I don't have any internal auditors right now. But I don't know if the IAPC's ever done that, but you'd have to have a goal in mind. You know, what are you going to do? Because otherwise, we're pretty much doing an audit. And you'd want to have a subcommittee for doing an audit of Tucson Water and DTM. And you'd have to have a reason. Oh, and I mean, and not that we couldn't come up with one, but we'd be, in effect, doing the audit.
Well,
we can do that, but it would be done separately from the main our main meeting. It would be an internal audit of those two departments. But what are you looking for, though? I mean, you can.
Well, I guess what I'm looking for is an alert to the city council and the mayor that they've got an underfunded capital budget in Tucson Water.
Right, and that's going to take a little while to figure out, because
I don't think it can be done in this session. That's my point.
Yeah,
scratched the surface, but now we regather and we say, well, what more do we need to know before we can be speaking with certitude on this point?
Well, and so then I think as a commission, we need to figure out if we need an internal audit of that. And if we do, then it'll have to be a subcommittee doing the audit.
All right. Well, let's take a look at that. I know that we're running out of time, Sarah, and you have 5 o'clock.
Put that on the next month's agenda. We will discuss whether we want an internal audit of the collaboration. It's not of the collaboration, but it's an internal audit of the capital capital determination of the capital needed for Tucson Water
to keep up
assets.
With
assets
to keep up with the road projects. Right. I mean, actually, I think we just scratched the surface on that.
Yeah, it's actually just to keep up with itself. I mean, there's for all the assets, what is the amount of money that needs to be spent yearly in order to keep up the assets in functional, capability?
Just if I may, we still need to do a call to the audience and finish that up and then go to the future agenda items.
Okay, so I'm going to start thinking about the next report to the mayor and council. Okay, so six, call the audience. So do we have anybody in the audience? I can't tell.
No, there's three participants showing.
And it's
you, me,
you,
and Sarah.
And who's the third?
It's me. It's on my computer.
No, I know, but you said there's three participants.
It's myself, and this.
Okay, because you're a participant. Okay.
And I have, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. Okay, so none of that. Future agenda items.
No, I think we just covered that.
Right now, we've got the FY24 budget book presentation. Is that?
I think that was... You wanted to, I believe it was in the other meeting that you still, I think one of the commissioners mentioned that they wanted to look at the FY24 budget book. So that's already out.
It was probably me. Yeah. But was that the one I was asking Aaron about?
I believe so. Yes, because I remember you did ask Aaron.
Okay. So hopefully if we could see, well, he was going to send a link.
Okay.
So hopefully if you can ask him. Hey, can you send that link? Okay, then maybe that answers that question. Because what we see the financial report, but we don't know what the budgets were for the departments. Potential future. So we're going to leave that one on there until we get the information. Review sections of the Tucson Code regarding IAPC functions and reporting requirements. We started that, but I'd like to put that as the next agenda item. And then how should we deal with the Tucson Water DTM thing?
So I believe if I may, commissioners, I believe please. For future agenda items, it does have to have, an official vote on making sure that we vote on future agenda items.
We'll list them and then, and then go back to them. Okay, that'd be great. Okay, what's another... do we want to look at?
I want to look at a draft report on what we learned.
Okay.
Sarah, did we? I don't remember that we got the slide presentation that Scott went through.
No,
you have not, but I could request it.
Yeah, that would help.
What are we talking about? A draft report of what's going to go to mayor and council?
Yeah. Well, just a section of it, not the whole report, just to drill down a little bit on this issue.
Okay, so you're looking for the future. We're thinking about putting on the...
To include in the annual or the six-month report to the council and mayor,
IAPC.
A brief summary of our findings and recommendations respecting Tucson Water and its capital budget as it might impact the Proposition 411 road projects.
Okay. And then I also want to do the section that's going to be about the internal audit program.
Sure.
Okay, so we got three things we want to look at that we for future agenda, and if you agree on these, we can vote on this. So one would be... we're going to look at a future agenda item could be looking at the FY budget book presentation. That'd be one of them. And that's just to show us what are the budgets for these different departments. Another one would be review sections of the Tucson Code regarding IAPC functions and reporting requirements. And then the third one is going to be looking at a draft report, or the start of a draft report from the IAPC to the Mayor and Council to include Tucson Water and internal audit function.
And Sarah, could you go back to my articulation of the proposition that I had just stated? I mean, it was in the recording, I'm assuming.
For Tucson Water?
Yeah. Because I think, as I made my narrative there, Sarah, I kind of articulated the vision that I had of what this report might address.
And you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
And I will, since this is recorded, usually yes. I go back and listen to yes. the recording and provide a detailed minute. Yeah.
That's my point. And that's
it's exactly gonna be on concerns about concerns about the capital budget, basically.
And its impact on the Tucson Water's capital budget as it might impact progress with respect to Proposition 411 roadwork.
Yeah.
That's okay. The issue.
Okay. So right. Are you
I
in
move
favor
to accept
of...
those. I move okay. to approve.
Okay. We're just, let's see. And I'll second that. Okay. And then I'm in favor of that. Are you in favor?
Yeah, I vote yes.
Aye. Okay, perfect. Let's see. We anything else we need to?
I believe that's
okay.
We captured everything.
Wednesday, March 5th is the next meeting. Okay, that sounds good to me. Wednesday, March 5th, and I'll probably be remote.
Okay.
For that one.
So I'll right try now, to show up, Sarah, so when I can find out where you're sitting.
Yeah, the location will be on the agenda from now on. We kind of got dinged. It was kind of an oversight. I apologize.
Not a problem. I don't need an apology. Yeah. I'm not looking for it. I just wanted
but
to
but it's going to be clear. On there. You know, we got dinged, but we'll do it.
Okay.
I think we got that fixed. Okay. So I'm officially adjourning, and it is 5:08 p.m.
Thank you both.
Thanks very much for attending.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, it is kind of interesting.